And if you ever want to just have an experience of attunement, rather than trying to listen to words of it, you can just travel around a little bit. Wherever you go, you're home. It's amazing just watching so many different people and different types of people attuning themselves to the same vibration. I must say, when I was giving service in Sacramento last week, it just felt like it fit me. I thought, this week I'm going to come back and I'm going to stand in the middle and say, come on, everybody, just gather around. Much more of an audience and expansive sense here, but otherwise the feeling was all the same and quite wonderful. I'd like to share two stories with you today, but I want to preface them by a realization that I've had about them before I speak. I've always had a little bit of discomfort in telling some of these stories that I tell about that happened through my medical career. For those of you that don't know, I am a physician as well as a light bearer and many other things, but I have practiced medicine for many years. And I really was inspired to go into medicine sitting right on the beach. I know many of you know this, but just for those few who might not, underneath the Encinitas Hermitage, long before I knew anything about Yogananda, long before I had ever heard the word Swami, I just had no idea, but the inspiration came. Years later, I realized Master just so sweetly picking me up and putting me right where he wanted me to be, where he was really going to best be able to use me and where I could grow spiritually, sort of plunked me into medical school. And it just happened just like that. It was just like the Red Sea's parting. But part of what I heard that day that I went home and announced to my husband, guess what, I'm going to medical school, and it has to be an Ivy League school, just like that, was that it had to be an Ivy League school because I would be practicing in unusual ways. And for many years, I thought that meant I would be practicing what we've come to call holistic medicine. I'd be teaching a little bit of yoga, which I did, and talking to people about mind, body, spirit, and their health and wellness, which I do, and, well, on and on. Many ways I've practiced outside of the box. But literally just a short time ago, whether it was weeks ago or months, I can't say, I think more like weeks, it came to me that part of what that meant, that I would be practicing in unusual ways, is that I would be receiving many of my spiritual lessons through the practice of medicine. And I would be given the opportunity to share those stories of those lessons, not as lessons or stories about Shanti. I want to tell these stories, but I really want to say to you that genuinely, in my mind, I'm out of the picture. What I've come to see is that every one of these stories that I tell, they belong to all of us. They're our stories. My turnstile happened to have been medicine, but it doesn't matter. We could look at these stories based on our own lives, and we can all learn great lessons from them. And that, in a way, it would just simply be selfish of me not to share them. So I'll repeat once, then I won't come back to it. These are not stories about me. These are stories about us and the way the divine, the way God and Master are looking to work through our lives, if we will allow that. So the first story, which I've told some of you, but I had a different realization about it last week, is that when I was still a nurse and I was working in intensive care unit in those days, one of my clients had a cardiac arrest. That means his heart stopped and his breathing stopped. And we started this resuscitation. And several times during this resuscitation, the physicians who had come, I was the nurse, wanted to stop the resuscitation. But I had this very strong feeling. I was 20 or 21 years old. I knew nothing. Nothing. I was as naive as I could be. But I kept having this feeling that we shouldn't stop. And I kept telling them that. And maybe some of you know that when you're a specialty care nurse, ER, ICU, CCU, you tend to learn a lot about that area. And, you know, if you're at all good at it, there's a lot of respect for you. Well, the doctors were going to be hard-pressed to stop when I kept saying no. But I kept having that feeling. And at some point in that resuscitation, my attention was drawn up to the right-hand corner of the room, and I saw the man who was laying on the bed, and he was looking at me, and he winked at me. And I said to the doctors, "We're not stopping." And we didn't stop. They said to me at some point, "His pupils are fixed and dilated, which means he's brain dead." And I said, "No, we're not stopping." Well, we didn't stop. And the next night I came back on duty, and he was alive. He was still on a respirator. And I put my hand on his arm, and he opened his eyes, and the first thing he did was wink at me. And I was trembling. I mean, I couldn't have said why then. I don't know I could say why now. But as soon as I could, and this is what was so important about this story for me recently, I went to the phone and I called my mother. I was in Washington, D.C. I was 20 or 21. She was in Pittsburgh. I said to her, "Mom, we have no idea what's going on in this world." And she said to me, "What do you mean?" And I said, "I don't know. But I know that there is so much more going on than we have any idea about." Well, of course, now we're all sitting here, and now we all know that, and now we all believe it. But when we talk about attunement, it's sort of like that. We hold it up there. What does that mean to attune ourselves to these great masters? Now I'm going to fast forward, and I'm going to tell you another story. About 10 days ago, I was working an urgent care clinic at Kaiser, where I work. And a man came in to see me, one of 20-some or 30 that I was going to see that day. He had a headache. He said to me, "This is a horrible headache." And he said, "But you know, Doc, it's my sinuses. I've had a lot of sinus problem. I hear everybody's having allergy problems. Give me whatever you got in your toolbox," he says to me, "for sinus trouble." So I said to him, "Okay, let me examine you." So I examine the man, I find nothing. I do a complete neurologic exam because he told me this was a bad headache. I find nothing. But there's this feeling in me, and it's saying to me, "You have to get a CAT scan on him." So I say to him, "You know, you're probably right. I've been seeing a lot of people with sinus problems, but I want to get a CAT scan." He said to me, "You're kidding." I said, "No." So he starts telling me he's got to get back to work. I said, "You know, I can't let you go without a CAT scan. I'll call radiology, and I'll tell them to do it right away." He said, "Let's make a deal. How about if you send me home, you give me whatever you got. If I still have a headache in a day or two, I come back." I said, "No, no deal." I send him off. I mean, I think the guy's going to think I'm nuts. I send him off for the CAT scan. 15 minutes later, I get the call. Really, this can just bring tears to my eyes right now. The radiologist says to me, "This guy's got a huge bleed in his fourth ventricle. You want me to send him right to the ER?" I said, "Absolutely." I call the neurosurgeon, and literally, I was trembling because I see four people a day with headaches, if not more. It would not have been a mistake to send this man home. His exam was normal. It was just a feeling, don't let him go, that I have learned to pay attention to. I called the neurosurgeon, and he said to me, "How did you know?" So I said, "I don't know. Just go see the guy in the ER. Like, he's bleeding." 2 hours later, this neurosurgeon comes up to the clinic where I was working, and he comes and he gets me out of a room. He said, "I really need to talk to you." He sits down with me, just face to face, close. "How did you know?" he said. I said, "Know what?" He said, how did you know to send this man for a CAT scan? He was really shaken. I said, I can't answer that for you, Ed. And he said, why not? And I said, because you want me to tell you that I saw a sign or I heard a symptom. There was none of that. He said, well, how do you know? I said, I meditate. And he took my hands just like that. This is this neurosurgeon who's just done surgery on this man, put a shunt in his brain. And he said to me, teach me. It was so powerful. It was so humbling. Master says to us, if you attune yourself to me, I can then inspire you to right attitude, right action, right decision in every circumstance. He doesn't say to us, go out and learn every single detail that you can learn about anything, whatever your profession is about. Shanti, you learn everything about every headache, no matter what, every aspect of medicine, every drug you're going to give, every side effect, every interaction. Who could do that? And it's just about me and medicine, but write your own scenario. We can't do that. You know, we just have this instance of buying this. We're in the process of trying to buy the farm. Everybody knows about it. And we had a great team of people come together to think this through. I had nothing to do with the farm. I mean, other than my prayers and saying an affirmation and putting a lot of energy in. But I was not part of this team. It was a great team of 5 or 6 or 7 people. But could they single-handedly have sorted out everything that's going to go on around this farm? Who's the judge? Who's the current owner? Who are the other buyers? What's the mood going to be? What if the judge is having a bad day? On and on and on. How can we do that? We could never do that. We would run amok so quickly in life. In fact, most of us do. There's no way other than by attuning ourselves to this master that we are ever going to be able to see the red light when there's a bleed. There was no way for me to know other than listening, other than paying attention, other than praying. I realized in hindsight that I trembled both because of what I said to my mother 45 years ago. We have no idea what's going on in this world. None. Even as I stand here all these years later, all these hours of meditation later, all these reading of Swamiji's books, singing these songs, chanting, we have no idea. Things happen in our life, and we realize that's what all we can do. Do our practice. As was said in our reading today, Master didn't talk to the monks this way. Swami told us many times. I was present in a couple of Swami's talks where he even said, you have it so easy. I tell you everything. Master didn't tell us anything. Why? He wanted us to attune to his vibration. Look at all of what he said to Swamiji over the years. First of all, Swamiji got there. He was 22 years old. One year later, he was 23. And he said to him, take charge of the monks. But it didn't come with an instruction book. Nothing. There wasn't even a hint. Just take charge of the monks. When he gave that talk at the garden party, and he said, my words will be planted in the ether. And he talked about starting communities. And Swamiji heard him. But he never told Swamiji how to do it. He said to Swami, you have a great work to do. Over and over. And then Rajashi said it to Swamiji. But he didn't tell him, never mind how to do it, even what it was. None of that. He said, basically, the blueprints are in the ether. Attune yourself. Find your way. Follow the path into the ether. And everything you need to know about anything will be there. You have a great work to do. We all have a great work to do. We're not all Swami Kriyananda. Of course we're not. Most of us are not going, probably, to accomplish anywhere near in this life. But the great work that we have to do is whatever our next step is on the path, whatever way we can be working at attuning ourselves to the will and the direction of these great saints that we've been put in the company of. Here we all are. Our reading today is saying not only do we need to attune ourselves to these masters, but we need to remember in every moment that they are the source of all of the wisdom, of all of the energy, of all of the magnetism, of anything we're going to accomplish in this life, that first we need to attune ourselves, because we're attuning ourselves to a reality that already exists. We're not trying to create anything. We're trying to find our way to perceive the truth as it is. And we can't do that on our own, not solely on our own. There's an adorable joke that I heard Bara tell some years ago about a rabbit and a beaver who were sitting in the Grand Canyon, and they're relaxing and they're having a nice time, and they're sitting, he tells the joke that they're sitting and looking at the Grand Canyon Dam. I don't really know that there is a Grand Canyon Dam, but it doesn't matter, there are dams. There's a Glen Canyon Dam, there's Hoover Dam. The rabbit and the beaver are sitting there, and the rabbit looks at the beaver and he says to him, "Is that your work?" And the beaver gets pretty humble and he goes, "No, but it's based on an idea that I had." Our egos are amazing. Every opportunity we have, we want to take credit. For what? For what reason? To live in this human consciousness? For how long? When we have at our fingertips, when we could have access to a state of infinite consciousness, what will it take us to learn we are that infinite consciousness? That's why the stories are so amazing, because the stories point right to Master's saying, center everywhere, circumference nowhere. He's talking about a soul. But I felt, when I was thinking about these stories over the last few weeks, it's true, story by story, life by life, if we all get right to that center, the center of everything, circumference nowhere, we could, they're all of our stories, we're all one, we're all standing in exactly the same center, having access to this infinite fund of knowledge, to infinite wisdom. Swami said in the reading today, we can't get there any other way. We can't learn our way there. We can't reason our way there. That's what he was saying. No amount of reason. We're talking about that which is of soul consciousness, not ego consciousness. Swamiji has a great line in one of his writings. He says, God and the mortal ego, the path to enlightenment is narrow, he says first, and God and the mortal ego cannot walk down that path side by side. Eventually, one or the other's going to have to politely step off and let the other one move forward. Now, what choice are we all going to make? God or the mortal ego? But yet we're constantly drawn back. These readings from the last 2 weeks have been so beautiful. I am the vine, you are the branches. What happens if we cut ourselves off from the vine? I was telling this story in Sacramento last week, just about 3 weeks ago. The timing of all of this is a simple story. But it's so amazing that it came to me when I would then be giving these two Sunday services. Several years ago, I had somebody plant a vine in my yard to give me some privacy from my neighbors. And when he planted it, he said to me, "This stuff's really going to grow. It has a mind of its own. You're going to have to watch it." I said, "Great, that's just what I want." But a few weeks ago, I noticed, after years, this stuff is really growing. It's growing into my windows. It's growing around the water drains. It's growing into my neighbor's windows. I said to myself one day, "This is not good. This can't happen." So I go outside naively, and I go to start trying to pull this stuff off of the building. No way. This stuff is not coming off the building. It has grabbed on like its life depends on it. It's not coming off of anything. So I'm thinking to myself, "Dear Lord, it's going to be like one of those monsters that grows. It's going to..." I saw the buildings cracking. You know, I saw, what am I going to do about it? So I said to myself, "You have to cut it off at its source. You have to cut the branches from the vine. Because just like it says in the reading, if you are the branch. If you cut yourself off at the vine, you will wither and die. If you remember that you're connected to the vine, you will bear fruit. There's no other way to bear fruit. Guess what happened to the branch of my building? You know, it died. And in a week or two, I could just go, and it had none of its power. It had nothing left to hold on because I cut it off at its source." It's so often what we do unwittingly. We don't want to do that. We want to be the part of this reading that bears fruit, that is, what's the word Swamiji used today? Basically, that it's weeded, that it's pruned. It's not the word he used, so that it can even bear more fruit. And those beautiful words, "Abide in me, and my words in you, and what ye ask, you will find." It's such a wonderful promise. Master said over and over that just by saying the word God, just by saying the word God, we create a vibration within ourselves that allows God's vibration to enter us. How much more simple could it be? When asked what is a good mantra, what are one of the best mantras? He said two words, "Om Guru, Om Guru." Just keep saying Om Guru. Just say God. I then did so many sermons like this. I'm about to end another one this way. We have this beautiful purification ceremony every Sunday. Many of you aren't there all the time. Maybe some of you have never been there. Please come. It is so beautiful. And there's a line in there that the light bearer says to who's ever coming and kneeling in front of us, "We're acting in the name of the masters. We're being the purest channels we can. And we say to you, the master says, open your heart to me, and I will enter and take charge of your life." Everything that we've just been reading here for the last 2 weeks, take charge of your life means, Shanti, I'm going to let you know loud and clear when it's not the next person with a sinus headache you're seeing. I'm going to let you know when you shouldn't stop the resuscitation. Open your heart to me, and I will enter and take charge of your life. It doesn't mean we're surrendering anything, not one thing that's meaningful. It means that we are abiding in God and his words in us when we open our heart and appreciate the promise of what that means, that God will take charge. When we remember, just because we heard it, because we had to read it, because I said it, that all we have to do, Master said, is just say, God, Om Guru, God. It's so simple. It's easy to write it off like it's not the truth. This is an avatar who's telling us, just say God.